Life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we respond to it. The right mindset is what separates most successful people from the average person. Changing your mindset can be one of the most valuable skills you can learn to help you create your own kick-ass life. Well, we want to help you begin that process today and give you a free copy of David Wood's training, Mindset, Your Key to Success. In this downloadable training, you'll learn how to develop a winner's mindset, how to overcome limiting and negative beliefs, how to love the word no, and much, much more. To download your free training, simply go to thekickasslife.com/free. That's thekickasslife.com/FRE.
Hello, this is David Wagner. I'm a daymaker, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
So hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You know, I was just thinking right now about the kind of music I wanted to play on today's show, because normally I throw a little music in there. Not that I'm a DJ, but I don't even know how I started doing it, but now I'm doing it. And I was thinking back and thinking about my guest today, who's awesome. And I was thinking about what I was like when I was younger, because you're going to hear the subject today is all about focus. And I was the least focused kid that you could ever imagine. And I was going to describe what I looked like. So imagine me at 13 and 14. I was wearing 6-inch heels, because back then, you know, the bands were like Slade and Sweet and Gary Glitter and all these bands, these British bands. And you know, so that was very much the look. Long hair, right down to me bum, and you know, and very, very ugly clothing, I remember. But anyway, here's one of the songs from one of my favorite bands at the time, which I'm not so fond of anymore, but here we go. And we were wild, there's no doubt about it. When I look at my son, just had his 15th birthday, and I was thinking, you know, I left home at 15, and I was left school at 15, and you know, I'm there with all of his 15-year-old and 16-year-old friends at his party. I was thinking, you know, wow, you know, I don't know if it's different parenting styles, or, you know, I think we tend to overparent a little bit more these days, more cautious, more careful, I suppose. But certainly, I can't imagine my son out on his own. Not at that age yet. I mean, great kid, but just not. I mean, I like the fact he's still a boy in so many ways, and I think we grew up way too fast. I know we did. But you know, the guest today is a man who has sold 750,000 copies of his book, and with your help, a few more, because it's really worth the read. And I just really this is a guy you're kind of going to hear by our connection, because I already know what it's like. We actually met backstage at an event, and it was one of those immediate things. You never know when someone's about to walk on stage what they're like. You know, some people are really in their head. Some people are really, you know, they're not always very present. Some people are a little bit up, you know, up on themselves, and they don't want to talk. They, you know, it depends. Every trainer is kind of different. But I really talk about that authenticity piece being so important. And this guy has it in spades. And, you know, he's from a little bit of Ireland, man. He's got a little, from Ireland himself, he is. And he's just got a wonderful heart. And today really is about focus. And the reason I was thinking back to my childhood is because I couldn't focus, obviously. I left school at 15, could hardly read and write. But a lot of it was the teaching styles. And in some degree, they've changed. And in some degree, they really haven't. There's so much science, and a lot of what I teach is around accelerated whole brain learning, and a lot around, you know, teaching to VACs, and there's visual learners, auditory learners, kinesthetic learners, using a lot of emotion. You know, the whole idea of what I teach in, one of my programs, Good to Great, is really about lighting up the brain so people remember the lessons 10 years from now. And of course, you know, I mean, I have trouble getting, you got kids jump in the car. What'd you learn today? Nothing. What'd you do today? Nothing. So, you know, I don't know if you got kids like mine, but I talk to a lot of other kids, not just mine, but it just seems like, you know, you think that there would be an evolution of the schooling system where schools became fun. And I know I've gone into schools and I've spent day teaching teachers. And it's, they have a blast while I'm teaching them all this stuff, but actually incorporating it and making it a part of their teaching curriculum sometimes can be very, very hard for them. So anyway, before we bring him on, you know, I just wanted to play one more song of this wonderful band. And I can't think which one to do, though. You know, I'm just, I'm on the edge right now. There's a couple here that I like, but... But here we go. We're going to play one more. You make me out a clown and you put me down. I still love you. I just like the things you do. What a different era, right? Anyway, so my guest, 30 years experience, and this guy understands it. He gets business, and he knows what focus is all about. He's wonderful on stage. I watched him for 2.5 hours on stage. He's traveled all over the world and taught his wonderful lessons on focus. And, you know, he's co-wrote a book with my good friend, Jack Canfield, The Power of Focus. I want you to sit and listen in as I have a wonderful chat with the most beautiful man, Mr. Les Hewitt. You know, like I always say, and I'm sure you guys are getting a little tired of it, I'm really excited. I'm always excited about my guests. And today I've got someone who... we were recently on stage together in front of thousands and thousands of people, and watching this master at work was just it was exciting. There are some great trainers in the world, and there are some extraordinary trainers in the world, and this guy is truly extraordinary. So, Les, welcome to the show.
My pleasure, David. Really looking forward to this.
Well, you know, I wonder, you know, I was thinking about you the other day, and I look at my own life, you know, in sort of the world of Twitter and Facebook and, you know, and sort of ADHD everywhere and people sort of really struggling to focus. I mean, you're known as the focus coach. Why is focus so hard in today's world? Well, what's that all about?
Well, I think you just alluded to it. What we see basically is people are just distracted and interrupted constantly. And of course, a big part of that, David, is they allow themselves to be distracted and interrupted. I mean, just take a look at something like emailitis. I mean, what is usually the first thing that many people in the business world do right at the beginning of the week, Monday morning, they jump in and they go right to their emails. And usually there's a lot of stress that happens just by doing that first thing Monday morning. And, you know, then we have all the interruptions through the week. We want to work on things. We want to focus on things. But our own lack of self-discipline, poor habits, other people getting in the way, it's just endless.
You know, and I think it's even worse than that for some people. It's not just Monday. Some people, the first thing they do when they jump out of bed is reach straight for their iPhones and straight into email. And, you know, in your experience, and I know you work with some great companies on many continents and really have helped, really hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in this arena. How bad is it for you to wake up first thing and jump straight into the email sort of pool?
Well, I think it just creates immediate stress because usually a lot of those calls or messages we're receiving are demanding us to do something, to respond quickly, and it just gets you off to a bad start during the day. If you think about the first half a dozen messages that come across, they're probably not all really happy ones that somebody's just about to write you a check for $1 million or something. That's pretty unusual. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's very unusual. And, you know, I would compare that to the media intrusion, you know, if you look at any news media first thing in the morning or listen to it or watch it, same thing at night, I mean, it's just totally negative. If you had six news stories and you graded them positive or negative, they're probably going to be all negative when it comes to media. And it's similar, you know, we allow ourselves to start the day in a very stressful way. And I personally, you know, it takes me over 2 hours to get ready for the day. And I'm not suggesting everybody does this. I'm up about 5:30 in the morning, and I choose to do that. I like to get up early. So one of the first things I do, you know, go out, have a brisk 30-minute walk, no matter what the weather's like, come back, do about 20 minutes of core, you know, just good stretching because I had some back problems. Then I have a nutritious breakfast. I read something stimulating, you know, do all the shower shaving and that sort of stuff. But that's my routine that gets me ready mentally, nutritionally, physically, spiritually, ready to go for the day. And my mindset is in a really good space when I do that. And again, I'm not suggesting everybody does that. That just works for me. If I was to do that in the evening, particularly the physical stuff, wouldn't work for me. So figure out what your best way to start the day is and get into a routine doing it, and you'll have huge benefits from that.
What I like about that, though, Les, is that if we look at the true, you know, titans in business world, or we look at people who've really succeeded on all levels, typically we find that they are people that get up early and they do have routines that work for them, and they prepare themselves for the day. I'm fascinated by this piece, and I'd like to spend a little bit more time here. You know, one of the things you said was, you know, it wouldn't work for you in the evening. Isn't it true that most people, if they leave it, it's just so easy to get busy, get tired, and if you don't do it first thing, it's very, very easy to just put it off and not do it at all. Is that something you've found with people?
Absolutely. You know, and most people have their big to-do lists, which I think is another bad strategy. You know, and they look at the to-do list, and they usually start with some of the easy things to get themselves warmed up, but they're really big top priorities. A lot of people never get into those right away, and they'll push it back and push it back, and it's 4:30 in the afternoon, and they haven't started the most important priority. So, you know, and the other thing I think is everybody's got their own rhythm, their own energy, and I think, you know, you really got to know that, because some people are genuinely night owls. They just work great at night. They can work to 2 a.m, and they have their best ideas and best productivity at that time. For me, that doesn't work. And other people, you know, we're the bright up and at 'em 5:30 a.m. people. And then some people, they kick in about 12 noon. So you got to know when your own best rhythm is. And focusing comes into play here, because I know my best focusing time, David, is usually, I would say, 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. If I'm writing a book, for example, maybe till about 10:30, 11. And then, you know, that's my most productive time, because my energy's bright, I'm creative, all those things are working for me. 9 o'clock at night, shut off time, doesn't work. I'm watching a soccer game.
Let me add, this is interesting. So if we open this door up in people's minds, we say, look, you know what, if you're going to get more focused, and I want to sort of get back to your story in a moment. I know we kind of jumped right in, but I want to sort of find out how you came to be a best-selling author with, you know, 750,000 books sold in 19 languages. But I'm still fascinated by this thing. So if I'm trying to figure out my best rhythm, would I already know it, or would I have to sort of get up and try it? I mean, how do you figure out what's best for you, or do you kind of instinctively know?
Well, that's a really good question. I think you've got to really, first of all, be conscious of it, because the busyness of the day, David, as you know, people get sucked into that vortex very quickly. And so you really need to have another level of consciousness about, you know, is my energy sagging? Is it dropping? Are the people around me sucking my energy? You know, when do I feel brightest and ready to go? And you just got to be very conscious of that. And, you know, if you did that over a period of a couple of weeks, just monitoring, you'll figure out pretty quickly when those best hours are.
Sure. And you said something else that which I love, this whole idea about sapping energy. How important has it been over your journey of becoming the focus coach the environment piece, you know, people around you that are sapping you and not stimulating you. Does that play a big role in people not succeeding to the level they want?
Yeah, I think it's huge. Actually, I remember back when I started a little sales company many years ago, and I was really excited about the opportunity. And I remember the time I wasted on people who would never join the business, you know, and yet they took hours and hours and hours of my time. And I think, you know, for me, it was just, I'm going to convince these people if it kills me. And, it, you know, it almost did energy-wise. So I think you've got to, again, be very conscious when you come into contact with people and you're observing your energy during the interaction. You know what it's like when you connect with somebody. And, you know, I had this connection with you when I met you. I thought, wow, this guy's terrific. He's got great energy. He's, you know, mentally stimulating. All these things are going in the business world. You know, he's doing extremely well. So that attracts me, of course. And there's a chemistry there that we, if we're conscious, you know, we really connect with that. And then as the opposite, of course, if you're hanging around with somebody constantly and every time the conversation ends, you feel absolutely drained, then you know that that's not the sort of energy that you want to be having in your life. And sometimes, unfortunately, it's people that might be close to you, even friends, in your family. Maybe your in-laws and your outlaws can be a big problem that way. And that's not easy to walk away from. But I had a friend tell me years ago, if you're with somebody, you know, who's just constantly draining your energy, he said, you know, do you just walk away in the middle of that conversation? His advice to me was, no, run as fast as you possibly can. Get out of there, because that energy will kill you.
Yeah, you know, and you again, you keep bringing up these points in my head that I'm thinking about. So let's talk about creating that space. And I want to keep talking about this energy thing, because for us, it was immediate. I felt it, you felt it. And I mean, there are people that just charge you up. If someone's sitting, I mean, so you know, like we're in 154 countries. And so people from all around the world are listening right now to this show. And everyone has different sort of rhythms, like you talked about, and different energy. If somebody is kind of like, you know, attracting a lot of that sort of down, negative, darker energy, or that sapping energy, or they're not succeeding, what can they do about their own energy so they start attracting people like you and me into their lives, where, you know, when they start meeting people, people's sort of ears perk up? What are some of the things they can do personally just to become a more energized and a more interesting, more excited person?
Great question. And I think one part of that, David, that's really important is to, again, become very conscious of the energy that you're putting out. So if you're putting out negative energy and you're not aware of it, then you're attracting people who've got similar negative energy. And I don't want to go into the whole law of attraction thing. I mean, but it's just that simple. You got to be very conscious of what you're putting out. And the way to shift that is realizing, okay, either I'm hanging around with people who are bringing me down because of their negativity, or, hey, maybe I'm the negative one. So I've got to rethink this and shift my mindset. And, you know, the people that I've studied and researched, you know, people who are truly successful, and we're not just talking money here, I'm talking whole life successful. And, you know, these are people that have what I call a champion mindset. So, for example, if they get into difficulty, they have a setback, sometimes even a crisis, that could be health or financial, or they lose their business or whatever. But a champion mindset is they respond to the situation very quickly and they're able to adjust and adapt. They often have great people around them that they can have as advisors, as in a mastermind group. I have a mastermind group that have been meeting for 23 years, just five of us. So, you know, I get around that type of really exciting, supportive energy, and it makes a huge difference. So be careful, be very careful about the people that you're hanging around with. And I like to think of creating a fortress of people around me, people who I select constantly. And I think this is a lifelong situation, David, where you pick people who are the best at what they do. And that changes everything.
Mm. So it sort of comes back to the how you opened the show, where you talked about how you get up in the morning, you know, that you feed yourself a nutritious breakfast, you take that walk, you come and do your core work, you read something stimulating, and you set yourself up. I mean, just having that kind of routine, whether it's in the morning or some part of the day, is going to start to energize and sort of raise up your personal energy, where you will start to bring to you the things you want. Isn't that right?
And by the way, when I say read something stimulating, it's not the newspaper.
Well, we should talk about that, because that's something I find really interesting. You know, we often joke about CNN being continuously negative news, but when people jump out of bed, or, you know, they finish their day with the news, I mean, how devastating is that to keep pouring negative things into your head?
Well, you know, it's your subconscious. You're feeding it. And the worst thing you could do, as you know, is go to bed at night listening to the news or watching the news, because most of it is so negative. And your subconscious just takes all that stuff in. And no wonder you can't sleep, because you have nightmares and everything else. And you certainly don't start your day with that. When I say something stimulating, I like to read an autobiography. I just read one recently about James Dyson, the guy in England who, you know, invented that incredible vacuum cleaner. And what a story. Against the Odds, it's called. Amazing story about persistence and all the setbacks that he had, and he kept going and he kept going, and he's a massive success today.
That's awesome. So, Les, I mean, when someone like yourself, you write a book called The Power of Focus, you have two co-authors, Jack Canfield, Mark Victor Hansen, from The Chicken Soup for the Soul. Take me back. How does a guy like you, who's, I mean, obviously the most down to earth, easy to approach, you know, you just got this real authentic quality and just a gentle quality about you. Yet there's a fierceness about you as well. But how did you get from where you were into this point of becoming a best-selling author and traveling around the world and doing the programs you do and changing the lives the way you do?
Well, I'll give you a thumbnail sketch. I was not born in North America, and like you, I'm an original Irishman born in Northern Ireland in a little quiet place called Belfast. And I was born and raised there, David. And, you know, unfortunately, the Troubles, as they were called, reached a peak in the early 70s, and it was a war zone, basically. And so I had an opportunity to actually leave in 74, came over to Canada, right to Calgary, Alberta. It's a beautiful city. And when I left school, I had no clue what I wanted to do. I mean, I was into sports. I love sports, particularly soccer. Never thought of writing anything. But when I left school, I just didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. And my dad, who worked in a big hospital in Belfast, and he stayed in that job for 44 years, and that was his generation. It was all about security. Stay there, you'll get a pension, everything will be wonderful. And he said to me, forget college and university, because it's too expensive, you don't need it. And 2 weeks later, come back and said, I've got you an interview in the same hospital that he worked at, the Belfast City Hospital. I've got you an interview to be a medical lab tech. And I go along for the interview, I pass the interview, and a few weeks later, I'm starting work full-time as a junior medical lab technologist. Now, that's a very scientific career. Let me tell you the two worst subjects that I had going through high school, math and science, my absolute worst subjects. And so I drifted into this job that was totally unsuitable for me. I spent 8 years qualifying. Then I got an opportunity to run the hematology department at the Calgary General Hospital, and that's how I got to Canada. I spent another 6 years there, so a total of 14 years in the wrong job, wrong career, not making any money, completely stuck, going home at night to my wife and complaining about the job that I didn't like. And then I got an opportunity. I actually started up a little disc jockey business for a little spare money on the weekends. And, you know, I'm pretty creative, and I ran that for years. And one of the interesting things that happened, I was playing a Christmas banquet for a direct sales company, and a guy recruited me. And I said, no, I haven't got time to do that. He was persistent. He traced me for about 3-4 months. I finally went down to see what this business was all about. It was one of those little networking companies. I didn't have a clue about it, but it just suited my personality. And in 6 months, My wife, Fran, and I were the number one distributors in the country. We'd traveled to Paris and Nice and France and the Bahamas a couple of times and California. It was amazing. But I find something that I was really good at. And then the biggest thing, David, was the fact that Jim Rohn was the master trainer in that company. And Jim Rohn became my very first mentor. And I just, you know, owe him so much, because when one person comes into your life at the right time with the right messages, he changed my attitude, taught me how to set goals, clarified what my strengths were, gave me direction, absolutely changed my life. And so from there, I started a program called Achievers Canada, ran seminars, personal growth seminars, brought Jim in lots of times. And over 12 years, we did 450 major public events with over 100 of the top personal development experts in the world. And that was like a free education for me. So where the book came about, I started coaching programs, doing group coaching, really enjoyed seeing results from that. These were 2-3 year long programs for business owners. And I thought, hey, this stuff really works. And so I thought about writing a book. I outlined the book. And then my big challenge was, how do I find a publisher? Now, Jack and Mark, the Chicken Soup guys, had been on my programs. We'd become friends. Very quickly, it's all about leverage. I went down to see them. They said, love the idea. We'll co-author the book. And in one phone call, I had the same publisher that they had with Chicken Soup for the Soul.
So when we look at this relationship, I mean, everything you've talked about and this whole story of success, I hear over and over and again, this sort of the relationship with Jim Rohn, the guy that was persistent with you, and then you sort of stepping into one relationship after the other. How important is it, this relationship piece in anyone who's listening right now who wants to really build the success of their life and live the life of their dreams? How important is that piece?
Absolutely essential, David. And by the way, it took me a long time to really understand the power of building and nurturing and enriching long-term relationships. Even in my personal and family life, it took me a while to learn this. But I had these wonderful mentors, wonderful coaches in these various business ventures that I started. So to me, from a business point of view, strategically, relationships are all about leverage. And that example, when I was in Jack Canfield's office in Santa Barbara in California, I said, Jack, I really appreciate the fact you're going to do the book with me. I'll write the book. You guys are super busy, but you know, give me input. But how do I get a publisher? He said, hold on a minute. And right there in his office, he phoned the publisher at Health Communications, the Chicken Soup Publishers. And this is exactly what he said. Hey, Peter was the name of the publisher. He said, Peter, I got a friend of mine here in the office, Les Hewitt. He's got a good idea for a book. Mark and I want to be involved. When can we do it? And Peter said, yeah, we could do that next May. That's fine. That's how fast we got a publisher and international distribution. Now, this was great for me because I'd never done a book. I didn't have any exposure like that. And by leveraging myself with people who had massive exposure, I immediately got credibility. And that's just one example, but always think about leverage. And I describe leverage, David, as who you know, who knows, who you need to know. I'll say that one more time. Who you know, who knows, who you need to know.
So I'm writing that down as well, because I think it's so brilliant. So if we look at this, give me, before we go into the power focus, guy, I really want to glean a few of your gems. I know that, you know, anyone who's not read the book, they're going to get the book, they're going to read it. That's a sure thing. But talk to me a little bit about this, the things you've learned about relationships. And I love this quote, who you know, who knows, who you need to know. And that's, again, from my own journey, our stories are quite similar. And I think one of the reasons, again, we hit it off, you know, both coming to Canada, both from the same part of the world, and having that same experience with relationships. And do you ever, sometimes you must pinch yourself like I do and think, how the hell did this all happen? Is that, especially when you've been in a job that you like you said, you were there for so many years in the wrong job, doing the wrong thing, coming home, not loving what your life was like, and now a complete transformation. Do you ever do that little pinch on the arm thinking, how did this all happen?
I do it constantly, practically every day, David. From the back streets of Belfast to wonderful events around the world. I mean, it is truly amazing. I'm absolutely grateful for it. And one of the things I do is I say a little prayer every morning of gratitude. That's another way I start the day. And one of the things I say is, how do I add value to people today? And again, that's a mindset. So when you've got that type of consciousness, and I'm not saying this to impress you with me, it's just I think that's really important because your mindset is challenged throughout the day. And if you start the day with those very strong focusing thoughts, you're like, what is my attitude like today? What is my energy like today? What's my main focus going to be today? I call that the triple check. You can do that in 30 seconds. You know, what's my attitude? Check my attitude, check my energy, and check my focus. And so, again, you're just using those little techniques to make sure you're staying on track and on focus. But, you know, with relationships, another great mentor of mine was a man called George Adair in Phoenix. He had a wonderful program called Omega Vector. It was one of these 3 or 4 day intensive personal development experiences. And he taught me the value of win-win. And one of the things he did in one of these intensive workshops, he stood me up in front of the group, and George was a brilliant facilitator, the best I've ever seen. And he asked me a very direct question in front of my peers, about 40 people in the room. And he said, I got a question for you, Les. Are you a giver or a taker? Nobody had ever asked me that question. I mean, it sort of took me aback. And I said, well, George, I think, well, maybe I take a little bit. But I think, I give as well. He said, no, you're not. You're a taker. I've been watching you. And this was George, like a laser beam. He cut through all the crap and he just hit you right between the eyes. And the thing, David, he was always right. He was always right. Brilliant, brilliant man. And I spent 12 years with him on and off, working with his programs and supporting his trainings as well. But I went home on the plane after a couple of days, and I really wrestled with that. Am I a taker? Do I take most of the time? Is it all about me and being self-centered? Or do I genuinely, consciously think about other people? And he hit me with this thing called win-win. And I started practicing win-win. I started thinking more about the other person, knowing if I can help them. And it's not a give to get, by the way. That's a poor strategy. But it's just giving because you want to help. And you do this a lot. I absolutely get that. But I was so impressed with this thing called win-win that we both win instead of win-lose or lose-win or lose-lose. And I got so impressed with that. I actually changed the license plate on my car to win-win just to remind me every single day how important that was. I go into the gas stations and sometimes the young attendant will say, did you win that car? No. It's a philosophy. I need to remind myself how important it is.
You know, that's interesting. I just had this trip to Africa. You and I were talking about this yesterday. And I was interested because, you know, high altitude edema is really a deadly thing. In fact, we walked past someone who'd passed away on the mountain, actually, you know, at 19,000 feet, this guy had lost his life up there. So, I mean, this is a serious climb. And one of the things I realized at the end of it, my takeaway as we were debriefing and unpacking this and, you know, leading 11 people up there in my team, it was that I didn't really experience a lot of the high altitude stuff, and I didn't experience the same climb that a lot of people do, because so much of the focus of my focus was on the team members and on our energy as a group and on our how much fun we were having and just noticing everyone. And do you find that, Les? I mean, when you're growing a business, when you're building relationships, when you're writing book, whatever, when that energy is out there in that win-wins arena, do you find that I mean, it's almost like success is magnified almost invisibly, and it's almost like you float through life. It becomes easier. I'm not articulating it very well, but that's what I felt about this trip, is that it just felt like it was easy. Everyone said it was going to be so hard, and the only reason why I came away with it being so easy for me was because my attention was outside of me so much of the time, and it made it very, very pleasant and very beautiful, the whole experience.
No, I think you described that really well. And flow is a great word. I mean, it'd be wonderful to be in flow every single day. I mean, I haven't experienced that yet, but when I am in flow, everything just seems to be effortless. And I think the other thing is, you know, I see a lot of people who are not focused and they're very stressed. They get the burnout, and it's not a pretty sight. And it's very, very stressful and harmful to your health and everything else. And they don't know what fun is. You know, so, you know, you've got to figure out what fun is in your business. First of all, do you really enjoy what you're doing? You know, I spent 14 years, and I mean, there were some great days when I was training, but there were a lot of days when I really questioned, why am I in this career? And I couldn't figure it out. But once you find something that you truly are aligned with, that you figured out what your strengths are, and then you find an opportunity that allows you to maximize those strengths and hone those strengths, then I think things begin to flow and you connect with people where you have this synergy. And, you know, one of the things I've learned about having clients is you don't need every client in the world or every customer that's out there in every industry. And Tom Peters taught me that years ago. You know, the In Search of Excellence guy, and he went on to build a big business. I was in the car driving him to the airport one day, and he said, you can't be all things to all people. And that's stuck with me. And so, you know, I'm searching for clients. Like I enjoy coaching people one-on-one, particularly business owners who've got a real business. But I'm very selective. I want people with the right type of energy. They're ambitious. They're fun to work with. And because of that, it's a lot of fun for me.
Well, because we have so many people around the world listening in, what kind of size of business do you like to work with? Just in case someone's listening in right now and they say, you know, I'd love to work with you. And obviously your results speak for themselves and your energy speaks for itself. So, I mean, what kind of size is your favorite, or does it matter?
Well, it's not so much the size. It's if they have a real business, so they would have obviously some staff, salespeople. They've been in business probably a few years, and it's not a wannabe business or just a startup idea that hasn't really started. It doesn't really matter what the industry is. I'll give you an example. I've got one guy right now who's he's the top fundraiser for charities in the country. And he's just a great guy. He's just a delight to work with. And he has a big plan for the future. And we've got the next several years all, you know, being planned strategically. And it's not just the business and the financial areas, you know, that I work with. It's a whole life. It's taking a look at your personal situation, your health, and everything else. So, yeah, just people, those are very attractive to me.
Mm. And I can see that because, again, you know, you want that flow and you want that fun piece. So let's just turn into the book for a second. And I know you have some amazing tools available that people can that they can tap into. And I want to talk about that in a moment. But let's talk about the book. Can you share a couple of I know we've talked about a lot of those personal areas of focus. But what are some of the a couple of things that people could take away that if the only thing they did was listen to you today? And that's what I always want to give is really give some massive value. Give me a couple of things that people could take away that would really have a huge impact on their journey to leading a kick-ass life. Because the reason they tune into this is because they want something more. hundreds of thousands of downloads in all these different countries. You know, and people are looking. They're looking for that edge. They're looking for that next step. Can you share a couple of gems with us?
Well, let's just look at, you know, if you're working in a career or your business and getting rid of some of that stress and being more focused. So one of the things I've discovered is that the worst thing you can do, David, is plan your day. Now, I know this goes against so many other people that say, you know, plan your day diligently. You get that to-do list, you put your priorities. But the truth is, in my experience, most people who do that, they just have this endless to-do list. Again, they usually don't start the day with the top priorities. They get frustrated as the day goes on. More things come up that distract them. Then they roll all the things that they weren't able to get done on their to-do list into the next day, but they've already got a to-do list for the next day. So, you know, this just carries on through the week. And the sad thing is they start working these crazy hours, like 15, 16 hours a day. They take their work home on the weekend, and then this disrupts their family plans, and it just goes on and on and on and on. And I've seen people totally burn out. They lose family relationships, divorces, their health suffers. Really big consequences that, again, are not fun to look forward to. So what's the alternative? The alternative is design your week. And let me give you the strategy on that. Design your week. What we do here is we take about 20, 25 minutes first thing Monday morning, or if you want, you could do it end of day Friday if that's the end of your week. And I take 25 minutes to really think about what are my best next actions just this week that will get me closer to hitting some of those most important targets that I want to hit. And again, it doesn't all need to be business focused. There's certain things in your personal life that would come in. But I would make a list of maybe, could be 15 to 20 things, best next actions that I need to focus on this week. When I've made that list, then I select the top three most important actions on the list, my top priorities. And I highlight those, and then the deal is here, I've got to complete those top three no matter what by end of day Friday for me. And if you have a team, I would suggest you do that with the team. Get everybody on the same page. And that first 25 minutes is really the most important time at the start of the week. Don't get into to-do lists.
So with these highlighted things, if they're really big things and you say you're going to get them done in the week, give me an example, like if you were writing a book, how would that priority show up? Would it be to get a chapter done for the week, or do you sort of break it down or sort of help?
Yeah, that's a really good example. So if I'm in the middle of writing a book, then I might say, okay, this week I'm going to complete chapter 3. So what I need then to do is figure out how much time, let's say I've got 5 pages to finish it or something like that. And so I would look at my calendar, knowing my energy's best at the early part of the day. I might block focus time, say, on Wednesday morning, and that would be from 6:30 to 10:30 in the morning. Now, that goes into my calendar, and it's called focus time. And this is really important because what we need to do to get bigger productivity and get our confidence and energy and all going in the right direction is to block several blocks of focus time on your calendar during the week. So for me, that would be probably a 4-hour block. Now, what focus time means is 100% of my concentration has to be on finishing those pages in the chapter on Wednesday morning from 6:30 to 10:30. That's where the discipline comes in, saying, I'm not going to allow myself to be distracted. I turn off the phones. I get away from the laptop if I'm not using it to write. And then you've got to tell the people around you who may be the interrupters, I'm not available from 6:30 in the morning to 10:30. That's focus time. And, you know, I have a great executive assistant here, and, you know, she understands that. So she won't be phoning me in the middle of my focus time saying, there's somebody on the phone for you. You know, she'd be fired. So it's super important, but you only need maybe 3, 4, 5 blocks of real focus time in a week to have tremendous productivity. And the other thing I find is that people overload their schedules. They cram every minute, David, of the day with something that's got to be done. And then the unexpected thing happens that knocks them sideways. And you got to leave some open space on the calendar because the unexpected does happen, as you know.
So because you've been, I love this, by the way, this really sort of is something I need to resonate with personally, because, you know, I find that it's so easy. And the key that I think was in there was this turning off everything else and letting everyone else know that I'm in focus time. And last summer I was able to do that more and more, but I find it was easy to drift away from. So this is a real practice, doing it weekly, blocking off the focus time, letting the interrupters know. I really like that, that sort of that analogy of telling the interrupters not to interrupt. did you find in the beginning that it was something you really had to focus, excuse the pun, but really sort of practice? Or is it something that, because it's so gentle and because you're blocking off just these certain amounts three or four times a week and you're leaving the gaps for the unexpected, do you find that it's just easier for people to swallow?
Yeah, but the key word you said there, David, was it takes practice. You don't just flick a switch and suddenly this all magically happens. You know, for me, it took several weeks to get into the habit of doing that. And that's another big issue. Like, I call that one of the fundamentals, you know. So, you know, I find, again, thanks to Jim Rohn. I mean, he sat me down one day and said, Les, your habits will determine your future. That's a big statement. I highly respected him. He was a wealthy businessman. He was a great person for understanding what worked and what didn't work. And I remember writing that in my ideas book. He told me to keep an ideas book of important insights. And I wrote that down. Your habits will determine your future. Didn't really fully understand it. And then he said to me, by the way, your bad habits probably won't show up in your life until much later, the consequences of your bad habits. And boy, does that, he said, brand that into your brain and never forget it. That was a game changer for me. So habits are a really big deal. So whether it's learning to set up your week by designing it better and having blocks of focus time or anything else, you know, and I discovered that if you just change three or four habits a year even, and you do that for a few years, David, you could literally transform any area of your life that you're not happy with. And that could be your financial situation, it could be your job or career, it could be your most important relationships, your marriage, your health, whatever. It applies to absolutely any area of your life that you're not happy with. And that's a really big deal.
Yeah, what I loved, even watching you on stage, and you were on stage for a couple of hours, which was amazing, in front of, you know, 1,000+ people. I can't remember the exact number now. But the what I loved and what I watched and what I realized with this group, because I know them intimately, was that a lot of the simplicity of your message and the fact that it wasn't, you know, eating the whole elephant at once. It was this sort of like you just talked about there, change three or four habits a year, you know, block off three or four hours of focus time. It was stuff that people could look at and say, you know, I can do that. And that's really the sort of the focus of your work, is actually finding things that people can get results with, because you've obviously tried lots of things that didn't work, but this is, it's simple and elegant and gentle enough that anyone who's committed to any change, anyone who wants to lead a kick-ass life or have a kick-ass business, have kick-ass relationships, can take this, these simple philosophies and really adopt them quickly with practice and get the results they want. Is that right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing, I talk about four fundamentals. Clarity is another one. And, you know, to have a kick-ass life, you know, you've obviously got to have a big picture. Well, what does that really look like? And I'm sure you do lots of work on that. But I find a lack of clarity is another big reason why people don't get close to having a kick-ass life. They're just not clear. They're fuzzy about it. And so one very simple practical strategy there is, you know, take a day away. You know, book a day in the calendar where you can go somewhere quiet. You turn off all the interruptions. And even just take a notepad with you with a couple of pens and start asking yourself very simple, very direct questions, you know, and you can start with, you know, what do I not like about what I'm doing or what my life at the moment? Maybe I'm really strapped with debt. Maybe I'm way overweight and I don't feel good about it. You know, maybe I need to work on, you know, my marriage or whatever it happens to be, to really have this great bigger picture. But it's the questions that have the power, David. The power is in the questions. So, you know, if you'd spent the first few hours just asking yourself simple questions in all the most important areas of your life, and then take a look at the answers you come up with, and by doing that, then you can frame a really exciting big picture. And I suggest, by the way, and this might go against the grain for some people, but I suggest you don't put any timeline on it. just have a big picture. Because I think some of the stress that people have, there's more and more people now getting totally stressed out because they have very tight, rigid timelines for achieving goals. It actually puts incredible stress on most people. Some people it works really well, but I find the vast majority of people put themselves under incredible pressure. And so have a big picture, get excited about it, and then you can start using some of these focusing strategies to make it happen.
Yeah, and I agree with you. You know, I do a lot of work with groups, and I look at sort of personality profiles, and you're right, you know, maybe 20% or 25% really do well with that strict timeline, but, you know, 75, and you may find it even more than that, maybe it's even 80%, don't do so well, but they actually almost feel like they start to compare their results and feel like a failure, and actually pulls them away and loses the energy that they would have if they just stayed in the game longer. Do you find that to be true?
Absolutely. And an acute fear of failure is one of the things that causes the most stress. So if you've got a very tight timeline, let's say like 3 months or something, where you've got this big, big goal, and then you realize about halfway through it's not going to happen, then all those emotions kick in, maybe old belief systems assisting them, saying, oh no, here's, I'm doing it again, I'm going to be a failure, and you know, your self-esteem and everything else takes a major hit. And you know, one of the things about creating habits or having a successful week, at the end of the week, if you hit those three priorities and you completed them, then really acknowledge the fact, you know, give yourself a big pat in the back or a small reward, whatever that is. And when you do that consistently, just imagine every week you're hitting just those three priorities, you know, most of the time, maybe not 100%, but most of the time, at least 80%, then what happens is your momentum increases, your confidence goes up. When your confidence goes up, your energy increases, and that drives productivity. And if you can do that with a team of people, wow, you'll absolutely transform your business.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, Les, you sort of alluded to this kick-ass life. One of the questions I love to ask is, you know, the idea of a kick-ass life for you, if you had to describe that for Les Hewitt, what is a kick-ass life?
That's a great question. a kick-ass life for me is doing the things I love to do by using my God-given talents. And right now, that's coaching, speaking, creating books, audio programs. That really gives me a lot of very positive energy. And then surrounding myself with people who, again, have that type of energy we talked about that's really attractive, it's positive, it's dynamic. And these people are just fun to be around. And to have those people in my life socially as well. And the other side of it for me and my wife Fran and I, that the kids are up and away, is to travel to a lot of places that we've never been to before. The chance of going to Russia, for example, with this new opportunity, and all sorts of other countries. I mean, the world is a big place and it's fascinating and exciting. You've traveled a lot. So, and to give back, you know, to really start contributing in a meaningful way with causes that I feel are dear to my heart. And Charlie Jones was another mentor of mine. Don't know if you ever heard him speak. Charlie Tremendous Jones, he was called. And he said, you don't need to change the whole world. Start with one family and make their lives better. Mm-hmm. And that really stuck with me as well. We just sort of adopted a Colombian family that in fact, the very first story in the new 10th anniversary edition of The Power of Focus, David, is their story. And they have brought so much joy to our lives in just who they are and how grateful they are with a little bit of help. And so those are some of the simple things. And to have a family that's loving and you know, my kids grow up and they're enjoying their lives, and hopefully we're some sort of a role model for that. So there's just a few things that get me excited.
Wow. Well, you know, we're sort of at the witching hour right now. And obviously we're going to have you back a number of times just to, get through even a minute amount about what you understand about this. But this was awesome. And I just want to say, I look forward to our evolving friendship. I can feel that it's going to be a strong one. And I always say that one of my favorite collections is the people in my life. And you're a hell of a part of the collection.
Thank you. And I feel the same way.
Awesome. Well, we'll speak to you soon.
All the best.
Like I said, you know, unbelievable. And so this is good stuff. What I like about it, I like the simplicity of the message. You know, it's something that I can really grasp, and I found myself already incorporating, is that, you know, that the really ability to not plan the same way we're taught to plan, and to really look at, you know, the doing the most important thing first, you know, taking three essential things and getting them done, and, you know, and really looking at the week differently than sort of, you know, setting these daily lists, which really I found to be less completely ineffective. Anyway, it's just great having him on the show, and really, you know, his tools are phenomenal. And you know, you really got to look him up and really sort of and use his work. I mean, if you're like anyone else out there, and you really struggle in this area, which most people do, especially how busy we are with all this bombardment of crap, you know. And I love what he said about, you know, clearing out that space, that focus time. And I've really started to implement that. And but, you know, the power of focus is what it's all about. Les Hewitt. So again, look him up and make sure you spend some time with him, because it's absolutely worth it. And I tell you, his email, by the way, if you want to talk to him personally, ask him any questions, les.h, as in Hewitt, at thepowerofocus.ca. That's les.h at thepowerofocus.ca. And, you know, I thought before we go, I shouldn't just let you off the hook with not hearing one more song from Slade. This is how I grew up. This is my big long hair, big shoes. It's funny, my mom called a few moments ago, and it's crazy. I mean, you think about this evolution as we raise these children. We spend the first 3 or 4 years teaching them how to sort of walk and speak, and the rest of their life teach them how to sit down and shut up. But no, it's a great journey, and as I look back over, it seems like 10 lifetimes ago that I was listening to these bands and going to school, and I was a kid that hated school. But you know, if I had been out of focus the way and being able to use tools that really allowed me to be able to stay in something, I would have seen a very different path. Although I'm really happy with the path I took, but there was things I would have loved to have accomplished and got somewhere more with, which I didn't, because of my ADHD brain, you know, and how quickly I flick from one thing to the other. So, again, you may want to listen to this show a second or third time. Quite often it takes that to get the real gems out. But again, Les, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, I will see you on the other side.
Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook / The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter at The Kick-Ass Life, and of course at thekickasslife.com.
That was kick-ass.